Mean snowshoeing. What does that even mean?
So we got 22 inches of snow this past week, and you can't walk through it because you'll sink like up to your thighs. So you have to get these the old-fashioned snowshoes where you have like basically tennis rackets on your shoes in order to not sink through the snow.
I have to tease you because he said 22 inches up to your thighs. I'm a
Whoa.
man. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's my
well.
ankles, young lady.
Hello, my friends.
Thank you for joining us for the PebCAC podcast, the weekly information security show featuring some all around good people. It is week 16 of 2024. I'm Chris Louie, and happy tax day to all you Americans. I had a recent run-in with the tax authorities, which I will have to cover in another story for another episode. With me, I have my co-host, the Cloud God, who hires a clever CPA, yet still received an unexpectedly high tax bill this year.
You know, it is what it is, right? I guess I feel blessed that I am making money and have to pay taxes, even though taxation's theft. Until they, ratify the laws, I guess I'll just write the check and call it a day.
Yeah, best not to mess with the tax authorities. Those are the guys that got Al Capone.
That's true.
And we do not have Glenn this week. Aloha, Glenn, but he will be back next week.
He's enjoying some much-deserved relaxation time with his wife in the Big Island, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we're doxing him right now, are we?
No, he'll be back by the time this airs, yeah. Yeah, don't try to break into his house. It won't end well for you. But fun fact, we did move the time of the podcast just for you, Glenn, and then we get a message literally like 30 seconds before we were supposed to start recording. He says, "Go move on without me. I'm not going to make it."
Yeah, like, it is what it is, right?
At least he tried. At least he tried.
I love that you say this like he's going to listen to the podcast and be like, "Oh, man, he is right. He'll leave you high and dry."
I think he listens to the ones he misses. This week's guest is Jody Jeanette, who was referred to us by our previous guest, Stephen Hajni. Fun fact, Jody is our first guest from Maine. We love having our guest referrals on. Welcome to the podcast, Jody. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hey, thanks for having me. Professionally, I'm a cybersecurity manager. I have an incredible global GRC customer trust team. Shout out to my team if they listen. I transitioned into InfoSec after more than a decade of teaching and integrations coaching. Basically, my IT department stole me from the classroom and gave me the confidence that I needed to do a career transition. I ended up getting my master's in instructional tech and have just been making my way since. Outside of the professional life, personally, I'm just a book nerd, a hiking enthusiast, and a hermit cat lady.
How many cats do you have?
I have one, but I've had three.
Okay, that's not bad.
And yeah, then... not bad. I did just put my cat in a beautiful, my male cat in a beautiful pink dress for my sister's baby shower, which I hosted at my house because he's very tolerant at the moment. And I am able to get him into now. We've trained him to catch treats and get him into hoodies and dresses.
You know, I was going to say you're not a cat lady, but as soon as you said you put him in a pink tutu, I was like, all right, this is a cat lady. That's all right. So how do you know Steven?
That's he crossed the threshold.
Yeah.
He has to. Yeah. I mean, he had to be dressed with the rest of us. It was not a Jack and Jill baby shower, so he needed to Jill up.
Oh, geez.
True.
Is that a mom joke? Jilled up?
Already. I don't know.
Delivering. So how do you...
I've heard a couple of those. I've heard a Jill up be maybe just in a slightly different context that I think will take us into another realm away from anything related to technology. Yeah, we're going to have to get that approved with the hosts.
So Steven said that you're like his sister from another mister or something like that. So how do you know him? I'm curious the backstory there.
Yeah. So Maine and, well, I guess New England, we have a habit of making family out of the people who are there for us when we need them the most. So We both were very lucky to be taken in by a wonderful woman who actually legally adopted Steve. We're really lucky that we have kind of decided who our family is going to be. And I won't say that I don't have wonderful family members, but sometimes you create the family that you need. And about maybe, gosh, it has to have been like 13, 14 years ago, Steve and I formed a really nice bond over some unfortunate trauma. we're very much the family we've chosen for each other. So his beautiful daughter is my goddaughter, and me and my husband hang out with him and his wife, and we call her Baby Bubbles whenever we can.
Oh, that's beautiful. I knew Steven was a good dude, but now I really know. That's awesome.
Oh, he's
an all-around
the best
good
dude.
Guy.
Yeah, we'll keep him.
And on the hermit part, you are in Maine, and before the show started, you just told us it's the middle of April and you just had a blizzard. So I don't know if anyone can really blame you for being a hermit up in Maine.
Yeah, even when it's nice out, like I live on a dirt road, literally on like a strip of land between two lakes. So I mean, there aren't, maybe my town has 2,000 people in the winter and 3,000 people in the summer. And I mean, there's not a ton to do out here, unfortunately. So you either become a hermit in your house or a hermit in the woods, and really not much in between.
So you guys are like legitimate my people. Like, you're like the hillbillies. You can't, I grew up in a small town as well, so I get it. All right, we can all, like, the parties at your guys' house, the bonfire and everything. I get it.
It's awesome. Well, also, congratulations on your Service First Mindset Award. I just saw that you had posted that, and congratulations for being recognized.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a weird honor to get a Service First Mindset Award in tech, because, you know, I know that this isn't news to you guys, but there's not any person on any team in IT that can do the work that we do without a massive lift from everyone else on the team. So I made sure to reach out to my other team members, you know, the ones that maybe don't do as much work in front of customers, and let them know that they're an important part of the puzzle. And maybe their name didn't end up on the award, but it did for me. And I hope that people, if you take nothing else from this podcast, go be nice.
Well, now we have an AAGG, an all around good girl.
Yeah.
Good job. Wow.
Sure. Just like Steven.
Yeah. Birds of a feather flock together. All right. Sure. So, hey, we're supposed to talk about tech too, guys, in case you forgot.
We'll try, Brian. We'll try.
Gross. I thought we were just getting emotional.
Combined, we have decades of information security experience here, not just to educate, but to entertain. We've got four awesome stories for this week, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This week, we're going to talk about wedding invitations. Your phone is now a proxy. For our third topic, we're going to talk about the XZ exploit, and close with career pivoting talk. For our first topic, our senior citizens are often the most vulnerable group for cyber scams, ranging from things like romance scams, medical care impersonation scams, or the more recent live stream funeral scams. Well, if the scammers couldn't go even lower, there's a new scam making its rounds in Malaysia called the wedding invite scam. The lure comes in the form of an unsolicited WhatsApp message stating the recipient is invited to a wedding and to click on the file for more details. The scammers then send an Android APK file, which is an Android executable application. If the victim installs the malicious application, it acts as an information stealer. Once the application is loaded, no further interaction is required, and the malware just runs silently in the background. There's no application icon whatsoever. The malware asks for permission to read SMS messages, and if granted, will forward the victim's SMS messages to a Telegram account acting as the command and control server. Once the scammers get a hold of the SMS messages, they can intercept multi-factor authentication codes, personal information, and reset account passwords.
Man in the mobile phone. I love it. And again, Victor, this is why you're a loser. You're an Android. You're susceptible to this. Not a problem on iOS.
Is this a bad time to tell you I'm also an Android user?
I mean, we kind of saw it coming, you know, cat lady.
With the cat lady and the hermit, yeah.
Look, it's not for lack of trying to be an iPhone user, but I just, I'm going to sound like the biggest piece of trash when I tell you at this point, I picked the phone for the camera.
You know, you're not alone. I think a lot of people do that. My wife has gone back and forth. She's like, I really, like, we'll be at like a concert and she'll be recording it and then she'll see somebody with like the S24 Ultra and she's like, why does my phone look like that? I was like, because we don't buy pieces of crap that have great cameras. I don't know what to tell you, hon.
Bring a dedicated camera then at that point.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I know. I remember I tell this to my nieces and nephews that we used to have like a digital camera and then like we had the, you know, the film camera and we had a phone all separate and their minds are like, that doesn't make sense. Like, where do you put it all?
Yeah, yeah. Everything's supposed to be all in one now.
And a calculator. Yeah. Don't forget the calculator. We used to have that too.
I will say that I only this year started using WhatsApp about, what, a decade behind everybody else. Now that I have actual international friends from working in tech, I really didn't need it. It's really not a surprise to me, though, that people are falling for this scam. Unfortunately, I don't remember, aside from like a couple of nice weddings, I don't remember the last time I got like a paper invitation to anything. So, I mean, for the most part, they're all coming through like Facebook or, you know, some Evite channel.
It's all
so.
Evite now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I resisted WhatsApp for as much as I could until, just like you, I either traveled internationally or I had to communicate with international people and everybody's on WhatsApp. And I like installed the app and I communicated with them. And then I usually don't go back to it unless I have a reason to. And then just the other day I went back into it and I got invited to like all these weird investment scams and crypto scam groups. Like, I just got added to it. So apparently there's a privacy setting I forgot to turn on, or I didn't know to turn on, that says let anybody add you to a group. So turn that off and you won't get into all these scam groups.
You're an idiot, dude. I can't believe you fell for that. Like you two, I just installed WhatsApp on my recent trip to Australia because that's what everyone uses down there as well. But everything Signal could do everything that WhatsApp can do, right?
Pretty much.
Outside of work, I try to not do anything related to tech. So I couldn't even tell you.
I mean, you say that with your hiking and stuff, but you also said that you like to play with your Nintendo Switch. So that's tech.
All right, listen. Let's not bring my Nintendo Switch into this.
Let's do it, because I just bought one as well.
Okay,
you just bought one?
What are the games you got?
I only bought one game. Me and my wife played it for like 2 weeks straight until we beat it, and it was Mario Wonder.
I just bought it yesterday. I was still on Mario and the Rabbids, to be honest. For anyone who does like really legitimate gaming, like my husband is like a big RPG guy, I am telling you right now, do not sleep on Animal Crossing.
My daughter plays Animal Crossing, and I will not, but I'm glad that you... I'm sure Chris
Listen,
is on
Disney
Animal Crossing.
Disney Dreamlight Valley. We need Disney Dreamlight Valley installed on there. We need the things that are going to take us fully away from the WhatsApp wedding invitations and fully into like just a better place.
My wife and I play Stardew Valley. It's like a farming simulator. I'm like, that's as far away from tech as you can get. Just like building a farm and doing farm chores.
Bring back Farmville.
I don't know if Steve told you, I legitimately in the summer go work for a farm on Saturdays because I just there's nothing like just fully switching gears, and I mean, and getting free potatoes is also kind of a bonus.
Getting away from tech.
Get away from tech and into potatoes. I'm a very diverse person.
More diverse than me and Chris, that's for sure.
That's for sure. I can tell you, I've never gone snowshoeing.
And well, so nice, we did like a little like dude's trip, and I kid you not, we're sitting there. I get back from the gym, and Chris is on the couch. He has his laptop, his phone and his iPad and the TV on all at the same time. I'm like, what are you doing, man? He's a psychopath.
Too many screens. Apple Watch, too. I had the Apple Watch.
Yeah,
like, how many screens can I put between my eyeballs and the wall?
Yeah, but Chris has got a problem. It's time for an intervention.
Remember when we used to be told to get away from, you know, get your eyes away from the screen, and now we literally strap like VR to our eyeballs?
Yeah,
it's come full circle.
This is kind of a sad statistic, but I think I've married more people than I've been to weddings.
Brian, what?
Not like married, like multiple wives, but like I'm saying, like as an officiant, I think I've
as done the officiant. Like, wait, yeah. how many ex-wives do you have, Brian?
That's how I took it too. I was like, buddy, you have some commitment issues, or?
Oh, geez, yeah, that didn't sound right. But like, I mean, how else am I supposed to say if I married somebody?
Yeah.
Do I just say I officiated?
No, you've officiated. How many ways have you officiated? I think that's the proper term.
I like saying I got them married. I'm going to stick with that. It's more controversial.
Well, on the topic of our guests having Android phones, for our second topic, one of our common sayings here on the podcast is that if a product is free, then you are the product.
Mm-hmm.
That's no exception for over 15, quote, free VPN apps on the Google Play Store that were found to be using a malicious software kit that turns Android devices into residential proxies, likely used for things like cybercrime and shopping bots. Residential proxies are devices that route internet traffic through devices located in people's homes for other remote users, making the traffic appear legitimate and less likely to be blocked. While they do have legitimate uses, many cybercriminals use them to conceal malicious activities, including ad fraud, click fraud, spamming, phishing, credential stuffing, and password spraying attacks.
Sounds like the newer version of Tor.
Yeah, basically. It's basically a malicious Tor exit node.
I've never had to
like implement my own VPN. I had no idea how inexpensive it is to just not have the free version.
Yeah, there's always those YouTube people pimping. Is it NordVPN or what? It's one of those that they say, use my code, get 3 months free. But yeah, they less than $10 a month for sure. But some people, the barrier is free and they'll use it, but comes at a cost. Or you could just pay a reputable company and just get your own. That's not going to turn your phone into a residential proxy.
I feel like even if you pay for certain apps, like you're still subject to some crap. Like I still think that we are the product. Because like, look at like Netflix or Hulu. Like, you know, you're paying for it, but I still think that they're gathering information on you and then reselling it. Or Slack or Twitter. Yeah.
They like, definitely, you know, are. Like,
I don't know that there's any sense of privacy anywhere.
Look, I think a good example of that recently, Instacart, DoorDash, Uber, like these are all paid services. Like if I jump in an Uber car, I'm paying for that ride. But they are collecting my data that says, hey, this guy likes to go to Chick-fil-A a lot. Let's target him with Wendy's ads. Let's see if we can... you know, changes his preference. And same with Instacart. If I always buy Skippy peanut butter, they're going to take that data and they're going to target me with Jif ads because Jif paid them more than Skippy.
Kroger, and aka Fry's, they're dialed in. Like when they send me coupons in the mail, it's everything that we've ever bought. It's always spot on.
I hate to say that probably no one is really reading the terms of what is going to be happening with your data on those, you know, terms of service sites, unfortunately. A bad example, of course, would be, I hope you guys do watch South Park, but the episode where they all just click and accept the terms and the whole town basically becomes owned by a corporation.
No.
I haven't seen that one.
I remember the human scent iPad one. Wasn't there something in that too?
Yes.
Or like the iPad conditions or something.
Yeah. They everybody accepts the terms and then you become part of the human scent iPad. I wonder what like the craziest terms that have been written into like a use contract have been that just they knew no one was going to read. So they just threw it in there for shiggles.
There was one cool one where it was something like if you've, It says, if you've read this far, call this phone number, give them this code, and we'll give you $1,000. And I think it took a while, but someone eventually found it, called it, and they actually gave him $1,000.
I remember that too.
Incredible.
So speaking of vices, what is your go-to fast food vice, Chris? Is it Chick-fil-A? Or is it
Chick-fil-A?
Taco Bell?
Yeah. No, it's Chick-fil-A now that we have one near me. Or In-N-Out, actually.
In-N-Out.
Oh, we don't have
mid.
I have to travel to get mine because we don't. The closest fast food place to me is like maybe 25 minutes away, so I have to like think globally of my favorite fast food. And I think no matter where on the globe I am, I will always fantasize about Checkers.
Checkers, what's that?
Checkers, is that a burger joint?
It's a burger joint, yeah, but it's like East Coast. South mid Maryland, I think, is the first place that I maybe ever had it. But I remember going like in the middle of the night and with my dad for the first time, and we were on vacation and we had heard like Checkers had the best fast food. And I don't know what it was about, maybe the timing or whatever, but we were the only people there that were like, we looked like highlighters amongst the people who were there. We were very pale compared to the average Checkers eater. And I remember being like, I don't know why this place isn't stacked from wall to wall, because this is the best fast food I've ever had. I don't Wow. think white people know what's out there when they are stuck with McDonald's. Yeah, maybe McDonald's we edit sucks. That out because I don't want to get sued.
No, you're good. I'm not a McDonald's fan at all. Ugh, gross. I will have to try out Checkers next time I'm in a state that has one. So
I think I'll do a PebCac trip to Checkers.
Yeah.
Delightful.
So I would say at least 4 to 5 times a week, you will find me at a Chipotle. Like, I am that guy.
That's I love my... a burrito.
You love a good serving of E. coli.
That's the only thing bro Steve and I do not agree on. Steve, who referred me to the podcast for people who are listening. He will not eat luchador taco with me, and I will not eat luchador taco if I'm near it. It's just the way it is.
Never heard of that.
Where,
luchador taco.
Yeah, where's that chain?
There's only like 3 locations up here in New England.
Are you guys aware of something called the farm team from Chipotle?
No.
No.
So I got turned on to this years ago, and it was something that the store manager would only give to like their favorite customers, right? And so one time I was in there, they gave me this invite. So it's like this little coupon code.
Hey, psst, come here, Brian. Psst,
yeah, pretty much, right? But the thing that was about it is like you go on there and you would just learn about Chipotle. So every day you would log in and you read the story about Chipotle. And then as you did it, you would earn points and you can get some swag or you get a free burrito. Every time you would get one of these cards, that would equal about 25 free meals. It didn't matter what you got on it, guacamole included. And so it got to the point where anytime I'd go into Chipotle, even though I already had the farm team, I'd be like, hey, I was at the other store and they said there's a farm team card waiting here for me. They're like, oh, okay, here you go, sir. I ate at Chipotle, like my entire family, for probably free for 3 years. Like, it was insane. It was the best thing ever.
Life hack, Brian.
Yeah. And then they got rid
Honestly.
Of it. Yeah, but I would even take customers, like when I was in Vegas a lot, we would go to Chipotle and then I would get them the free card and they'd be blown away, right? They're just like, I had no idea. I'm like, this is the way. I really miss that.
Everyone wants to be on the ins.
Yeah.
For that was, everyone that was a who sweet used to life love hack. The farm team with Brian,
yeah,
he's probably the reason it's gone.
I may have taken a little bit of an advantage, but it was great.
You
man.
Use like it now, a little too much.
Now I walk in to the one that's kind of close by the gym, and it doesn't matter who's working. They're like, all right, you want a burrito bowl, no rice, no beans, quadruple meat. That's exactly what I want.
The usual, Mr. Deech.
Yeah, the usual. Yep.
That's how you know you made it, when you walk in and they ask you, you want your usual?
It's kind of like that scene from the 40-year-old version when they're like, we're going to need more wax. They're like, they see me walking, they're like, we're going to need more meat.
Except for your Kelly Clarkson happens in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'd say coming from the West Coast, anytime I'm near a White Castle or a Waffle House, I usually have to go there. And then usually when I'm visiting people and they're local, like, why on earth would you want to go to a White Castle or a Waffle House? I'm like, yeah, I don't get that on the West Coast.
We don't have any of that. We have IHOP and we have Harold and Kumar. We don't have anything else.
Isn't that White Castle anyways? No?
Yeah, but we only get the movie, not the food.
Oh, okay. All right. I will say that I've bought the frozen White Castle, and that's hot garbage. Like in the freezer section. Going to the restaurant, not that much better. I don't know what the big hoopla.
It's the Crave case. That. You get the 30 burgers. You know, the burgers are about that big, and they have little chopped onions in it. You just down a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
This is going to be the lawsuit episode.
Is anyone else hungry all of a sudden? I bet you our listeners are. Anyways, we're talking about malware on Google stores. So, yeah. This is yet another reason why you don't need to have an Android device. Or at least be, like, when you're downloading that flashlight, does it need to be 17 gigs in size, right? That should be a giant red flag.
Doesn't need permission to read your SMS messages.
Or, yeah. Or your contacts. Or your Google Drive. I have no idea. What else does it access?
That's the argument. That's the argument of Google versus Apple. It's like yes, it does happen to Apple, but it happens way more often on the Google Play Store and the third party stores that you can install on Android. And they claim, you know, that it's Google Play safe, whatever, safe and secure, verified, but it took these security researchers to find it, report it to Google. Google had investigated. Like, yeah, you're right. We removed it.
Yeah, the part that stood out to me in that article is that they said that they don't know if the developers were aware that their tools would be used as a proxy, as if developers don't need to assume that every single thing that they create is going to be used for evil, because there are trash people out there. So, I mean, it felt like such a silly statement to say, like, well, we didn't know if it was going to be used for evil, to say, like, well, I mean, if there's a will, there's a way.
It's kind of
can't trust developers. Yeah,
just throw this in there. We won't do anything bad. Wink, wink.
Right.
I remember, like, okay, we had outages and stuff, and you have change controls put into place to stop them from rolling out code and doing different things, right? Like, we all get that. And so what did these developers do? They're like, yeah, we need you to, you know, put in this eye roll to whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, cool. And then I look at it, I'm like, why is there like an administrative login page to our forward-facing web application? I think it was for like University of Phoenix at the time. And I start talking to them like, yeah, this is how we can basically roll code and, turn features on or off. And we just kind of backdoored you guys. That way we have our own controls into production. It's like, you guys suck, man. I swear to God, you're the reason why we have outages. So developers, they say they didn't know it would be used for bad, but I think that all they do is just bad intentions. And they're a bunch of crybabies too. And if you're listening, you're a developer, you are. You guys are the biggest crybabies in the world. Anytime you feel like Big Brother's watching, you just throw a little fit and talk about your applications and they don't work anymore and it's broken. You're worse than a doctor or a lawyer at this point. Tell me I'm wrong.
Jody's right. We are definitely going to get some heat for this one.
I'm already afraid of getting canceled. I already said I like checkers. People are going to come at me.
I don't think they are. It's not McDonald's. If you said McDonald's, then they come after you.
Listen, I'm not hating on that sweet and sour sauce. Not today.
Where'd Chris go? He just walked out the screen. We don't know what to do without our host.
That's weird.
That he hasn't had checkers.
Yeah.
I have these pretty good noise-canceling headphones, but I can still hear something in the back. I'm like, what the heck is that noise? So then I look out the window, and they are repaving my street because I complained to the city a couple weeks ago that there, no joke, like, not exaggerating, there's at least like 30 potholes within like a 3-block radius of my house. So I went on the app. I took a picture of every single pothole submitted to the city. I'm like, you need to fix this because we already complained that says you have to repave the street. Like, you're going to ruin tires. And like, these are deep potholes too. And they said, oh, it's not on the city plan to repave this year, but we'll try to fix potholes as best we can. So I went up and down my street. I took a picture of every single pothole, reported to the city, and they actually sent a crew to fix the pothole. And they just decided to do that while we're recording the podcast. So that's what I'm hearing in the background here.
You know, the only thing
they
worse
probably have
than
access to your Google Calendar.
Probably, yeah. It's a conspiracy. This is 4D chess. Glenn made me move the podcast earlier, and then they scheduled the pothole filling to be done at the same time.
The only thing more whiny than developers, Chris, when it comes to potholes. Jesus, man.
You should see. I'll send you the pictures. Like some of them are huge. Some of them are really deep. Like if you don't drive, look like you're a drunk driver on this road to avoid the potholes, that's how you know. If you drive straight and you hit every pothole, that's how you know you're a drunk driver. If you're like swerving like crazy, that means you're sober.
This is because you drive those fancy low profile cars. Me and Jody, we got trucks. We know how to get like, potholes or not. We're getting over. It's no big deal. Tell me I'm wrong, Jody.
I mean, it's close enough. It's an SUV, but you're really See? Not wrong.
See? Sister from another mister. You get it.
Yep.
So back on the topic of whiny developers, for our third topic, we're going to talk about the XZ vulnerability, or XZ for you Australians and Europeans out there. This is an audible, and we literally switched up this topic right before the show, so we're going to do our best to talk intelligently about the topic here. But from my understanding, the world dodged a real bullet with this one, or maybe not the world, but the internet definitely did. And XZ is a compression library that's used in a lot of open source software. A lot of Linux distributions package this natively, and it ties into OpenSSH, which is the premier secure remote management tool for Linux and most of the internet out there. And what happened was an open source developer, and this is a years long campaign. This is not a fly by night, overnight operation. What happened was the attacker, believed to be state backed, created an account on GitHub and started contributing to many open source projects just to build up a cover that they are a legitimate open source developer. And eventually they implanted a backdoor into XZ, this compression utility. And long story short, anybody in possession of a 2048-bit RSA public key, a very specific key, would have been able to get into any SSH server running this vulnerable version of XZ. And thankfully, this was caught by a developer from Microsoft. This developer was doing some testing in Perforce and noticed that there was like a half a millisecond lag when using SSH. And he said, this is odd. Let me dig a little bit deeper into this. And the further he dug, he put in debug mode and he found out, oh my gosh, there is a backdoor in this library. So they notified the open source community. Thankfully, it wasn't rolled into the proper versions of Linux. They were only in the unstable versions of Linux. But if this had gone on, the attacker would have had access to any SSH server out there on the internet running the vulnerable version of XZ.
Yeah, what was interesting, if you read it, there's a lot of stuff going on there that I didn't really understand as far as like the linkings and removing symbols and codes or symbolic links and things like that. But what I thought was the most interesting thing was it was a long play, right? It took years of contributing to stuff. And the developer that saw the issue, you wouldn't notice it if you were logging in traditionally, like username and password. It was if you're doing certificate-based authentication. Right. And it was just like it was a little bit slower and it was kind of the red flag. And what's kind of interesting about this is if you're going to install a private key on, you know, OpenSSH, if you just throw it into the known host files, then it's going to stick out like a giant red flag. Right. And so instead, what they did, from what I imagine, is that upon like this authentication attempt with a cert, the XZ would pretty much proxy the known good stuff that's in there and then inject theirs just in case the appropriate key came in to do it. And that's really where the latency kind of kicked in, where it was importing, you know, the known list of the private keys and then embedding theirs in there. And the last I had seen no one's really figured out what is the actual public key that's out there that would be used to kind of unlock every single door that's running this vulnerable version, but it's pretty impressive how they kind of got away with it. Do you know how long it was actually, you know, in GitHub before it was raised as a red flag?
It had been there a while, but I know it hadn't been there long enough that it got rolled into the stable versions of Linux.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's weeks or months, but it was there for a while. It's sitting there in plain sight, but just this Microsoft developer knew exactly where to look.
How many people do you think were doing this and like, huh, that took a little while. Whatever, I got other things to do. And there's this one nerd. He's like, wait a second. Why is this taking too much time? A half a millisecond, you know?
That's going back to your whiny developers.
I was just going to say that half a millisecond. Now we were we were ripping on developers earlier, and here they are, like, 1 millisecond, that's suspicious, doing the work of information security, just kind of like doing it behind the scenes because maybe that's the impatient piece. Maybe you have to be a little impatient and a little bit whiny in order to be a successful developer so that you can spot this stuff.
Yeah, and it wasn't a half a millisecond. It wasn't a half a second, like 500 milliseconds, but it was something.
It might have been. It was something that, like, CD noticeable. Your pants, you normally shouldn't be able to tell. But this developer, he's like, I know exactly how long this should take. It's taking longer than expected. Something is wrong here. And it's a little bit about that hacker mindset, too, that says, well, something seems odd here. Let me dig a little bit deeper. Because, like you said, most people say, half a second, that's the price of doing business. But this person says, that's suspicious. Let me dive a little bit deeper here.
So, Jody, when you do your thing for GRC, do you guys do any assessments on like an external attack surface and say, hey, why is port 22 open to the world? And what are you guys doing to protect that?
Yeah, I think any good SecOps team will work with and not just an internal team, but an external team to make sure that there's some proper penetration testing and analysis of the network and the systems. Specifically, if you have an application that's internet facing, like my company does, yeah, we work with we pay big bucks to work with a reputable pen tester company. Without saying too much, yeah, we don't mess around with any of this. No, it's too risky, not with the data that we process. And really, that could go back to any of the other topics that we talked about as well, about, you know, if you're thinking about dropping big money on something like a good pen tester, or, you know, even like a moderately good VPN, the cost, you know, cost benefit analysis is, it will almost always tell you that, you know, depending on the data that's being processed, the breach is going to be so much more expensive than just doing the work up front. We're not looking to save $100 on a VPN or, God, I don't even want to say how much, six digits on a pen testing, you know, a pen testing contract in order to, you know, end up having it cost, you know, a breach costing us 20 million, 40 million.
Yeah. No one has money.
Pounds of prevention is a pound of cure.
I was talking with a CISO last week, and he said for him, his biggest problem when doing, you know, an analysis of the network and all that good stuff is in looking at CVEs and all the vulnerabilities that are out there. He goes, only 3-5% of these things actually will ever get exploited, right? And so if I have 200 of them, how do I pick the 3-5% that will actually ever get, you know, owned? And I thought that was kind of an interesting perspective, because how do you do that, right? Like, what are the chances of something actually getting breached, and which ones do you prioritize? And I think that's where, like, the whole zero trust messaging, like, if you can take those 200 things, right, and maybe hide 190 of them behind, you know, something else other than just exposed attack surface, then all of a sudden you can focus.
A zero trust exchange, maybe, Brian?
You know, I've heard of that. Yeah. I'm not here to pitch product, buddy. But, like, if you think about it, like, if you take that and you just have, if you hide 190 of them and only 10 left on the, you know, on the external attack surface, now you can prioritize that, and I think that becomes invaluable.
Yeah, it's residual risk. That's the whole governance risk compliance equation, the calculus you have to do.
And once again, right, like, so my daughter took an assessment, and so they said that, you know, you'd probably be good in technology. So then I was like, all right, I wonder, you know, what, you know, IT is predominantly a male field. But one thing I noticed at the Gartner Risk, GRC, whatever it was in DC, was it was predominantly women. And so then we have a guest on right now that her focus is in GRC as well. So have you noticed that the GRC is something that is a little bit more female dominated by chance, or am I just wildly incorrect?
No, I think you're kind of spot on there, because it's probably without meaning anything, you know, nefarious by this, it's a lot easier to get into GRC, you know, transitioning from another career than it is to, you know, just to automatically go become, you know, like an engineer or whatever. You can have a lot more applicable skills from other areas, you know, of, you know, my career started in teaching and education, and I was able to use, you know, the how to analyze a law, how to write, you know, action plans, how to, you know, basically take a risk and, you know, determine what would the cost be to, you know, fix whatever problem. I eventually, you know, had been working with teams, even for something as simple as like accessibility. I had partnered with Apple to make sure that my students it was a special education classroom where I started, to make sure that my students had like every possibility available to them through, you know, accessible tech. And it just, you have to be a little knowledgeable to be able to do those things. So, and that was just for something simple like compliance with an IEP. So, I mean, the GRC aspect, I think, pops up a lot more in our regular life than, you know, software engineering or even like tech support or something like that, because it doesn't really matter the industry. It's probably, whatever you do, it's probably governed in some way, and you have to comply with some regulation in some way. So, I mean, it's not a huge stretch to learn a little bit of the tech and apply the GRC aspect from, you know, wherever into the tech side.
You guys heard it here first. Jody says tech
is an interesting phenomenon. I don't know if it's phenomenon or something that was noticed. I read a book about the raid that killed Bin Laden, and they said in the book the team of CIA analysts that was analyzing the data to find out where he was, because like we're pretty sure this is him, we're pretty sure where he was, but the team of analysts to find out where Bin Laden was, it was all female. And the reason for that is because they learned at the CIA that this isn't like a man-woman thing, but they said females tend to analyze data in a little bit different way than their male counterparts did, that males tend to think very logically, very straightforward, and women tend to think in a little bit different way. So the team of analysts,
so not logically, not straightforward, okay,
looked at it from a different angle, and they're the ones that eventually got the intelligence that led to the Bin Laden raid.
I hadn't heard of that but I mean, there's no really way of getting around the fact that biologically our brains are just a smidge different, but there's everything. The thing is, I wasn't trying to say GRC was easy, and I certainly don't think analysis is easy. What I am saying is that if you're driven enough, it is easy enough to learn. That's all. I mean, you guys have done it. You broke into your fields and I broke into my fields, and I'm telling you, if you're interested, it certainly helps, because I also would not want to go be like a lawyer. I find that to be a lot more challenging and a lot less rewarding for me. So if you weigh those pros and cons, but I also am not looking to go be on a track down Bin Laden team ever.
Well, you can't be, he's already dead.
Well, I'm fair not enough.
The news. Just kidding.
Is he?
That's true. I mean, they did bury him like a Decepticon, so
out at sea.
Yeah, out at sea. That's the way I want to be buried,
by
the way.
I'm sure AI can help us with the video to make sure that that's true.
Yeah. All right, for our last topic, and it'll be a rotating topic every week.
More?
This week, we're going to talk about career changes, and we are a little short on time, so we'll just have Jody tell her story. But
yeah,
all of us on the podcast, we all started careers in a different direction, and somehow we all came back full circle and ended up in cybersecurity. Out of college, I thought I was going to be a lawyer or an accountant. Glenn was actually supposed to be a dentist, and Brian was trained to either be a coal miner or Best Buy's cell phone salesman of the month. And Jody was in the teaching field, as she mentioned. So what made
You're
you decide
so
to
wildly
change?
Wrong you... about me, by the way.
You alluded to it that your IT team stole you while you're working at this school, but what was the thought process of making this change?
I don't know if you're referring to Brian. I assume it would be an avoidance of the black lung, but for me, it was genuinely about trying to find some way to remain. This is such a hard thing to talk about because I never want to do any disservice to people who are going into teaching. It was what I was supposed to do, and I went to school for it. I did it. I had the most amazing, incredible kids. And like any person who does something for a long time, you know, burnout can be real. And so it just had to become a little bit of a decision, you know, but with me, my family, and sorry, it's really hard to talk about, but to say this is what I knew I was supposed to do, but I know I can do, it's time to do something else. And that was kind of what my drive was. So thinking, what is it that will still allow me to make a little bit of difference? What is it that's going to allow me to use my skills and strengths? And I mean, I talked to a lot of family members and friends to find out, you know, almost like making them do free consulting for me, like, what can I do with my life now?
Yeah.
And it was once I had a few people tell me like that they could see me doing something in tech, I didn't really have the confidence. I always thought, I guess when I was switching over, that in order to switch into tech, you had to like know how to code like, you know, a hacker on TV with the green screens and the black hoodies. And
yeah,
once I started doing
sitting
research, I was
room.
Like, oh, yeah, that's not real. So, I mean, do I have black hoodies? For sure. But that had nothing to do with it, obviously. So, no, I just wanted to use my strengths and pivot. And I still think that I genuinely believe that even if you are working, you know, for a corporation, the goal is to make sure that people, you know, are elderly folks on their WhatsApps, or, you know, people just trying to do the right thing and have a VPN, you know, that those people have awareness and understanding and are protected, you know, the little guys are impacted by these, you know, cybersecurity breaches and things like that. It's not just, you know, corporations we're trying to protect by taking these jobs. It's the everyday person, you know, their data, their information, sometimes their livelihood. So, I mean, that was enough for me.
Yeah, giving yourself to a greater cause, keeping the world safe out there.
Getting Saturdays and Sundays off to boot doesn't hurt either.
Yeah,
Saturdays
say
on
the
farm
for teachers.
And summers, right?
Yeah, there's something to be said about finding your place and doing something you're passionate about and doing something you love. Like Brian and I, we work with people that went to law school. They have their JD. They passed the bar exam, but they're having more fun selling software. That's not. It is about finding what you're good at, finding what you're passionate about, and whatever makes you happy.
I mean, on the flip side, we also work with some people that worked at Red Bull selling soda cans. So.
Or the, you know, Tupperware store.
It's very wide. But I like what you said, right? And I think it kind of boils down to, like, what are the key reasons why people do anything? And for me, it's always just been about, like, kind of money and knowledge. Like, and it was more of, like, I felt like I was a smart person, so I wanted to do something that challenge me mentally, and also wanted to get paid. And then I come to find out, like, there's, you know, there's people that went right into, you know, like a police type of career, and they were making way more money than me by working overtime and stuff. But, you know, the flip side, they were putting their life at the line, life on the line. But it's, you know, it does kind of come down to, it's either money, knowledge, you know, relationships, is knowing other people, or growing people in the long run, right? And I see you as definitely one of those people, like, to kind of grow others, make other people better.
I try to. I certainly try to. I know I said this at the start, but I really truly have the best team, and not a single person started in tech. Every single person on my team started somewhere else. And so it has been a huge piece of the joy that comes from the sometimes mundane GRC life is seeing other people, like, just crush it, like, learn and grow and, you know, see the puzzle pieces click. And it is pretty exciting at times, in spite of the, you know, for what it is, I guess. But
it's that teacher mentality.
Yeah, right. I know. I was laughing though when you just said something about, like, going into something for money, because the pay gap in tech is real, like, and it's bad.
What pay gap?
Yeah, so,
are you talking about between teaching and or being a female? Well,
that too. Both of those things, yes.
Oh, okay. Terrible. I hate hearing that, especially with three little girls in my house. But, you know, I did want to say this. Chris, are you getting Guy Moran vibes from her?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, definitely. Guy's a great dude. He was our manager. He hired us. Well, I don't think he hired you. He hired me, but he was one of the best managers we ever had. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that, because I didn't know who it was, and I was hoping he wasn't a tool.
Definitely not. He's a hammer.
I was about to say, Brian. You gotta clarify that one a little bit before we scare her off.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Good leadership. Good mentor. And yeah, we feel him channeling through you for sure.
Well, while we're plugging exceptional managers, I was also hired by a dude who definitely had the same mindset. So, Aaron, if you're listening, also, thanks for empowering me to do the good work out here.
Go, see, Aaron.
A little estrogen on the show. Never hurt anyone. I like it.
All right. Well, I continue to get great comments about our dad joke of the week.
Dad joke of the week.
This week, our guest Jody is up.
Cat lady joke of the week.
Yeah. My in staying with the fact that this is going to be released during tax season, I do need to just vent a little bit. So, you know what makes me so mad about people who cheat on their taxes?
What's that?
It just makes the world such an untrustworthy place for my 42 dependents.
That was a good joke. Good job.
All right, to wrap things up, teach your elders not to click on strange links. Free VPN services come with a cost. Sometimes that developer neuroticity can be a good thing in the world. And if at first you don't succeed, try something different. That's all I have for this week. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Find us all on LinkedIn. Links will be in the description. Follow us on Instagram at PebCac Podcast. Thank you to all our listeners and subscribers who raised 5 stars on the iTunes Store and Spotify and left us a review. We appreciate you all spreading the word to help grow the show. The best way to find us is to search for the PebCac Podcast in your favorite podcast listening app. My co-host Brian Deitch and our guest Jody Jeanette. I'm Chris Liu. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week. And as always, have a nice day.
Bye, Felicia. That's for you, Glenn.
Have a nice day.